So anyway, I want to talk for a few minutes about soul winning. It is my firm conviction that churches that emphasize leading souls to Christ, getting out in the community and reaching lost souls, have far fewer problems, far fewer instances where one member's mad at another member for some reason. We need to keep our attention out helping also. Yes, we edify one another, we encourage one another, but sometimes if we are looking too much inwardly, we get a little picky. And I want us to always have an outward focus at this congregation. I certainly want to myself. I know as a young man when I was thinking about what I wanted to do with myself, and somebody said something about maybe you ought to preach the gospel. I kind of laughed at first. I had never thought of it before. I was just graduating high school, about to get into college. And then I got to thinking, there are a number of reasons that might be beneficial, might be helpful to always be around the Word, to be around good people, godly people, to always, this is my task in life, not just my job, but my task in life. I make this task for myself to always be seeking to help souls, whether it be Christians or not. That really is kind of what we need to be. I don't know what your vocation might be or turn out to be, okay? But your task in life needs to be glorify God, to encourage other people to think about heavenly things, eternal things, to set a good example for them, and yes, to talk to people when they need to know more about the Lord, especially the ones who want to learn. You know, we talk about Jesus told the parable of the sower who went forth to sow, and he cast his seed on all kinds of ground. What type of ground is eager to grow? Well, it's good ground. The thorny ground is distracted. It's got a lot of stuff going on there. Chokes out the word. The rocky soil is there's not enough dirt there. It won't let the roots go deep. It's shallow. That wayside, that walkway where everybody walks is packed and hard, and it won't let the seed even penetrate at all. But the good ground, that's ground that's eager to grow something. If you know anything about, if you paid attention, I'm sure you have, if there's ground that is eager to grow something, it won't be very long before something's growing in it. Okay? If you don't plant something, it may be a weed. It may be something doesn't do anybody any good. It may not even have a pretty flower. It will not grow any fruit of any kind. No vegetable of any kind. It will not be any beneficial to anything. It'll just be a weed. But that ground is eager to grow something. That's the kind of person that we're looking for. I'm not saying that. I understand that if you go and you talk to somebody and you say, you know, here's a person who's thorny ground. She's got a lot going on, got a lot of pots on the stove, and all of them are cooking something. And all of them are worthy pursuits in some level. They're not nefarious or anything. They're good pursuits, but they're just things that are not eternal. How do you talk that person into turning those eyes off and putting lids on them? And let's sit down and talk about the gospel. You remember Mary and Martha? Mary picked the good thing. Jesus did not take that away from her. It is hard. Or you have someone who's just very shallow. And I don't want to say anything because I'm not trying to be critical of people who don't seem to be very deep, capable of deep thought. But there are people who may be capable, because again, the Bible's written on a fifth grade level. They're capable. They're just not very interested. Their attention span is short, and their attention is shallow. Not their mind or their heart necessarily. And how do you get them to stop and pay attention, to think about heavenly things and eternal things instead of what they want to do Friday night with their paycheck? Of course, then you have people who are hard-hearted, who are like the stony, like the wayside, the road, the path, where everybody walks or where the cars ride. You're not going to get through to that. It's a waste of time. Jesus said, don't even cast your pearls, don't even try to teach them. Cast your pearls before swine. They'll just trample them. So I recognize it's difficult. But when you find that person that is eager to learn, it really isn't hard. That's what you're looking for. And you say, well, Jeff, that's one in a thousand. Okay, if you keep looking, you're going to run into him. If you keep searching, you will run into him. It doesn't mean that person won't be involved. They may be involved in some type of church or religion of some kind. But they're still eager to learn. And you can compare and learn yourself how to compare the ideas of the Bible. But you know, there are various barriers that we face. And what we've been talking about with these various types of soil, there's a lot of barriers there. Some are impenetrable. I know churches hit barriers of growth. You know, talk about churches. You know, when you're small and after services, everybody can come over to my house and everybody that's able to come, you know. Well, that's a small congregation. When a congregation gets around 75 or 100 people, that's not possible. Okay? Then you have to start working in groups. And so you divide the congregation and this 20 people, they go visit the elderly. And this 20 people write cards to those who miss services. And this 20 people might be in some neighborhood effort to door knock or something like that. That's good. That's helpful. These are kind of, sometimes we call them glass barriers. You don't really see them, but you notice the results when things don't seem to work like they have been working. So this happens individually too. The things that we try to reach others with the gospel of Jesus Christ. So I want to talk a little bit about barriers and maybe talk about what helps us to overcome those barriers. First of all, I want to suggest to you that true growth comes from weak, not strong. I know that we would like to find the people who are like me, and I'm comfortable around them, and I'm not necessarily challenged because we're very similar in how we think. And I sit down with him and I just calmly explain the gospel. It's plain and easy for me to see. It'll be easy for him to see because he's like I am. You just won't find a lot of people like that. God made a diversity of people. We think differently, and that's okay. You know, Esau and Jacob were different. I'll be honest with you, if I met Jacob and Esau, I might like Esau a little bit better. I mean, I'm just telling you, I'm being honest. Man, he's a man's man. He wants something to eat. He goes out and kills it. He brings it home and he cooks it. And so he was a strong man who, you know, when his father needs something to eat, he calls Esau. He didn't call Jacob. Now, Jacob could go take something out of the flock. He's capable, but just in a different way. So even the people that are not like us, we can strive to reach them. Open your Bibles to 1 Corinthians 9. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. I want to look in a little bit of detail to something that we have often read, statement that Paul makes about how he approaches men. Let's begin in verse 19. Yeah. Paul says, 1 Corinthians 9:19, "For though I am free from all men, I have made myself a slave to all, so that I might win more." Okay? Paul's free from all men. What does that mean? That means Paul's salvation doesn't depend upon anybody. He doesn't let any man tell him what to do religiously. He doesn't owe anybody anything because he's always seeking to be godly in his conduct toward other people. But he's made himself the slave to all. Why? So that he could win souls. So now I realize that there's a lot of people in this world, you know, you think about, here's a person who's lost and, well, it's his business. He's lost. He needs to get straightened up before judgment day comes or he's going to be lost. Well, you need to go say, well, it's not my business. It's his business. That's not something I need to worry about. Yes, it is. It's something that God has placed upon you. Cain said, am I my brother's keeper? And God never answered directly that question. He ignored the question because it's a silly question. Of course you are your brother's keeper. Of course. There ought not to be any debate about it. To the Jews, I became as a Jew, so that I might win Jews. And what in the world does Paul mean by that? He is a Jew. What does he mean by that? He means that in all that he does, he shows respect and courtesy and goes out of his way in whatever way would be acceptable or pleasing to a Jew. Now, does that mean that Paul violates God's will for a Christian so that he can try? No, it doesn't mean that at all. But it means in as much as it is possible within the limits that God sets in his will as far as our conduct and our speech, I'm going to always do, and it's a simple thing. Do I get up on Saturday morning and go ask a Jew to go fishing with me? Of course not. I'm going to do that. I need to understand and be considerate and be thoughtful. But you know, there's a lot of people who they think that that's a way they kind of challenge it. Well, I'm going to go fishing tomorrow. I guess you can go. And they feel like that is some kind of an effort to show him that Christianity is better than Judaism. So you need to come and visit our service. There are people like that. But Paul says, no, you need to strive to accommodate as much as you can the feelings and the thoughts and the manners of other people. Okay? He says, to those who were under the law, as under the law, though not being myself under the law, so that I might win those who were under the law. Obviously, talking about the law of Moses, he's not going to set aside the law, the new and better covenant, for the old covenant. That's not what he's going to do. But to whatever degree he can, to those who are without the law, verse 21, as without law, though not being without the law of God, but under the law of Christ, so that I might win those who are without the law. There is a law of Christ. And we're under that law. And Paul is saying, here's somebody who doesn't have any particular religious belief at all. He's not under any law. I'm going to try to approach and to appeal to him in a way that he would find acceptable and not challenging and not disrespectful. And there may be many ways in which that could be done, but that's the point that he's making. To the weak I become weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men, so that I might by all means save some. I do all things for the sake of the gospel, so that I may become a fellow partaker of it. So what Paul is saying is that we need to reach out to others and appeal to them on their level as much as we can. It's going to involve some thought, some prayer, that we are going to try to help other people. Luke chapter 10, verse 33. Just as I also please all men in all things, not speaking my own profit, but the profit of many, so that they may be saved. You know, it says in Philippians chapter 2 that I need to put others above myself. I think that primarily is talking about in the church, but I think it'd be true in all walks of life. We need to try to reach out to other people. Romans chapter 1. Let me hit the right button here. Paul says, I am a debtor both to the Greeks and the barbarians. Why was Paul a debtor to the Greeks and the barbarians? What had they ever done for him except maybe persecute him? Both the wise and the unwise. So as much as is in me, I'm ready to preach the gospel to you who are in Rome also. What made Paul indebted to the barbarians and the Greeks? Well, the fact that Jesus Christ died for him on the cross. The fact that Jesus appeared to him on the road to Damascus and Ananias told him what he needed to do to be saved. Someone took an interest in you and in me. I need to pass that on. And I know that there were many before me, many after me maybe, that this person that appealed to me and I listened and I paid attention. Maybe many before me didn't, but that person kept on. Man or woman, whoever it was, they kept on. And I need to as well. As much as is in me, I'm ready to preach the gospel. So we need to think about how we can do that. Chapter 15. Romans, we then who are strong ought to bear with the scruples of the weak and not to please ourselves. Let each of us please his neighbor for his good, leading to edification. For even Christ did not please himself, but as it is written, the reproaches of those who reproached you fell on me. We must never forget that you convert the weak and you transfer the strong. You know, when someone moves here and joins our number, it's an encouraging, refreshing thing. But the church really isn't growing. I mean, this congregation may grow in number, but there's some congregation out there that they left that is diminished in number to some degree. We're glad that they're here. They're certainly welcome. We hope it might even happen some more. That's fine. But what we really want to do is we really want to grow the kingdom of Christ. We really want to bring people to desire to become Christians. And certainly, we're not in a competition for the largest congregation. We want to win souls to Jesus. If you haven't taken time to do it, I want you to pick up a bulletin on the way out. The article in the bulletin is, "Are we a visitor-friendly congregation?" So read the article and see if you think we are.
It's a little scale to grade this.
We need to think like a visitor. How would you feel walking into this auditorium? We certainly need to make sure when someone walks in this auditorium, they're greeted. And this congregation generally does that quite well. In fact, there's a lot of times when we have a visitor and I can't get to the visitor. I mean, I try before services and I try after services, and that's good. And I guess maybe you could overdo that, but I have a son who is very, very shy. I'm shy, probably reserved. He's 30 years old, so he wouldn't like me to say he's shy, but he's reserved. He's just comfortable by himself. And so when I go up to Hueytown and we visit services there, he's very uncomfortable. People coming up, shaking hands, introducing himself, and he has to say, of course, I encourage him to kind of, you want to tolerate that because you'd rather that than nobody speak to you. He admitted that. As uncomfortable as it may be meeting people and talking to strangers and things like that, and for him it is uncomfortable, he understands that that's still better than, and the congregation there in Hueytown is very friendly. A good group in that regard. So how would you feel coming into this auditorium for the first time? Going to Bible class for the first time? You know, a visitor isn't likely to return if he has to park way back at the farthest part of the parking lot, or if we were to grow enough and need the backyard and start parking back there, and he has to walk all the way up around. You say, well, really, he ought to be strong enough to come anyway. Well, that's true. You would like someone to be strong enough to be willing to do anything for the pearl of great price. But you know, if that's true for him, it's true for you and me too. So I ought to be willing to accommodate and make them as comfortable as they can. So give them my parking lot and give them my seat that's convenient. Now, I started to say chief seat. I don't know if we have any chief seats here. Isn't it interesting in congregations, your chief seats? Now, that's the apparently the desirable seats are all in the back of the auditorium. You ever wonder why we organized this auditorium the way it is? It was no accident. We decided not to put the pulpit up there and have all the chairs face that way and kind of have a shotgun thing. And then you go to these congregations and the back half of the congregation is packed, packed. And the front half has just got maybe a smattering of two or three people in it. What happens if we go to a ball game? We don't sit up in the nosebleed section, far away from the action as possible. No, we get down as close as we can. Are we telling something about ourselves? I think we are. I'm being honest with you. I think we are. And so we need to recognize that when you come into a strange place and the room is filled with strange people, you kind of want to sit next to the exit. Okay? Remember that song? I think, I don't know if it was Ray Stevens or who it was that about, or might have been Jerry Clower telling the joke about getting in a congregation at a supposedly a miracle service, and one of them said, "Where's the door?" He said, "I don't know. Where do you want one?" Sometimes you get in a situation and you just want to kind of be able to conveniently get out if you need to. So we have to accommodate that feeling. I know that we want them to be comfortable and come sit right up here up the front. But you and I don't really sit up front, except for Bo and Teresa. You know, we don't generally sit up front. We probably would be willing to. That's what we need to think about. Make things easy and accommodate as much as we can. So what we do as we arrange our services, we arrange them first for God. We are here for God first, to worship Him, to glorify His name, to please Him, and to do all things according to His will. Secondly, we want to make things easy for our visitors. Okay? So that they are not distracted at all. They can come and be comfortable and listen to the Word without any distractions. Thirdly, we're here to accommodate our members. We do like things to be convenient. There's nothing wrong with that, as long as things don't get out of hand and we begin putting things in the wrong order. So we need to recognize our need to look for those who need some help, who need some encouragement, who need a word of wisdom or some help or some guidance, and reach out to them. Those are the ones that are eager to change or eager to grow or eager to solve some kind of problem in their life. I know that kind of complicates matters because you get involved in their lives and it's going to require some type of commitment. They might call you a lot. They might be clingy. But we're willing to do all of that for the sake of the gospel. And so we need to think about those in our lives, not who are strong like we are trying to be ourselves, but maybe who are weak and needing either some guidance or a change or desiring to be a part of something in life that's bigger than they are. Another barrier we face sometimes is we try too much and we quit too early. Now, by try too much, I know I used to believe that every time I gave an invitation, I had to give some kind of motivation with the invitation. So it had to be kind of involved. Almost like every time I invite somebody to church, I'm going to give an invitation. You know, I open up the Bible, I read a scripture, and you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. There may be situations in which you can do that, and that's great, but that doesn't have to be the way every time that we invite others. In fact, I've really come to believe that when you're talking to people, and you're, especially if you're a stranger, and you open your Bible up and you start reading a verse, you know what they're doing? They're not listening to what you're reading. They're sizing you up. What's this guy's motivation? What's he want with me? Why is he coming over here to talk to me? Does he have some kind of is he gaming me in some way? Is he trying to take some kind of advantage of me? And instead of listening to all these things that you say, that's what they're thinking. So maybe what would be useful is just, why don't you just say, come and see. Use kind of the come and see approach, an approach that is not offensive in any way. You know, if I open the Bible and I start making some type of invitation, there's a possibility I might offend some people. Somebody doesn't believe in hell, or, you know, believes everybody's going to go to heaven anyway, pretty much, or except for a few spattering of, you know, Hitlers and people like that. There's a lot of people like that. I might offend people. And I understand that there are times when people do get offended. I'm not saying that that's not ever going to happen, that you avoid that at all costs. But certainly come and see is not going to offend anyone. Now, they may not come and see. You say, well, but if I don't give them a motivation, this is what I used to think. I need to give them a motivation. Well, God can handle that. God, through His providence, can make them thirsty for something. And so, that's the person we're looking for. And while I don't know how many people, if I had a two-minute invitation to come to church, it took me 2 minutes to do it because I had this little motivational speech along with the invitation. I don't know how many people I could ask, but I could ask a whole lot more people to come and see. And a lot of times, that kind of covers the gambit of people types too. I found that if you say come and see, the talkative people, the people who don't mind sitting and talking and finding out more about what you're about and what your church is about, that they're going to ask you a question. Where are y'all at? When do you meet? What are some of those? What kind of are you Protestant? Are you Catholic? What do you believe? So the ones who are talkative are going to talk, but a lot of people don't want to talk, and so they want to move on to their worldly pursuits, to the fun things that they had in mind they wanted to do. And then your invitation will not be a hindrance to them or something that offends them anyway. Look at John chapter 1. We've looked at this before, but we see two instances of this. First of all, verse 35. Again, the next day, John was standing with two of his disciples, and he looked at Jesus, and as he walked and said, "Behold, the Lamb of God." The two disciples heard him speak, and they followed Jesus. Jesus turned and saw them following and said, "What do you seek?" They said to him, "Rabbi," which translated means teacher, "where are you staying?" He said to them, "Come and you will see." So they came and saw where he was staying, and they stayed with him that day, for it was about the 10th hour. These are two people who are eager to learn. One or two who heard John speak and followed him, was one of the two was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, and he first found his own brother Simon and said to him, "We found the Messiah," which is translated Christ. How did he know that? Well, he came with Christ to where he was at, and they spent some time talking, enough that John was convinced that Jesus was the real Messiah. So the very first thing Andrew. So the very first thing Andrew did, verse 41, first found his own brother Simon and said to him, "We have found the Messiah," which translated means Christ. And he brought him to Jesus, and Jesus looked at him and said, "You are Simon, the son of Jonah. You shall be called Cephas," which is translated Peter. On the next day, he proposed to go into Galilee, and he found Philip. And Jesus said to him, "Follow me." Now, Philip was from Bethsaida, of the city of Andrew and Philip. Philip found Nathanael and said to him, "We found him of whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." Nathanael said to him, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" Philip said, "Come and see." I don't know if Nathanael was liable to be offended in any way. They didn't get into an argument about whether something good could come out of Nazareth. That's a side issue. You know, the quality of the people who are coming out of Nazareth is not an issue that they need to spend a lot of time on. Just come and see. That'll answer. You'll figure that out real quickly. And we know, of course, that Nathanael did, and he wound up making the statement in verse 49, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." Didn't take very long for him to see. So when you invite people and they say, "You know, I've got this church over here. We'll just come and see sometime if you get a chance to come." Gospel meetings are great for that, because people say, "Well, I'm a member of such and such church." "Well, are you meeting Monday night, Tuesday night, Thursday night?" "Probably not." "Come on, though. Just come and see." So it doesn't require a lot of difficulty on our part. You know, studies have shown that 80% of sales, and I'm going to compare this. I know the gospel's free, but there's some cost to getting involved in a Bible study. You got to go, you got to listen, you got to pay attention, then you got to find the truth about the things that are taught. There's some similarities. 80% of sales are made after the fifth call. So you call the first time, no sale. Second time, no sale. Third time, fourth time, finally, you make a sale. 80% of the time. Now here's one. 40% make one call and quit. You see a problem? And why at least 48% of the people don't make very many sales? 25% make two calls and quit. Well, you're getting down to a really low number. One fellow, Zig Ziglar, used to say that for 40 hours a week, there's a lot of competition in business. But after 40 hours, the competition drops off. If you're willing to show the interest, people notice that. They take that to heart. And it makes a big difference. You know, just as a thought, as you look out into the world and you think to yourself, "Man, Sharing the gospel is hard. You go and I've invited 10 people to come to church this week and nobody came. Well, truth of the matter is, if you keep up, if you won't quit, you'll find out that if you give 100 invitations, usually somewhere around there, you're going to get a visitor. 100 people. If you keep asking and keep talking to people and keep inviting people, somebody's finally going to come. I promise you. I found it to be true, and you will too. You have 20 visitors who come. Actually, I would change that to say that 20 visitors would equal one Bible study. And then usually 50% or more who complete a Bible study will obey the gospel. So the point I'm making in all that, and these numbers, I know that they're not always the same for every person in every situation. The point I'm making with this, just don't quit. If you keep on keeping on, you're going to find that person who's eager to learn and desires to be taught and is not going to be easily offended or worry about that. Why do visitors return? They come. Why do they return? Because the Bible was preached. Because they received something that helped them. Because they received love, warmth, and interest. Because the worship touched them. They thought it would help their children. These are all reasons why people go back to church. Do you know that not a single one of them said, because the ball team, the upward ball team, is about to go to the playoffs and my son's on the ball team? No. Didn't say because the church has an ice machine and they can really put on something. They got all these, this laser show. Or because there's a gymnasium and I like to play basketball. These are the reasons why people go back to church. And all of them are things we can do to make a difference. And so often we think so little of our own contribution. We think too little of, I'm not a person who can win a lot of souls to Christ. What we need to do is we need to get a fellow who's highly trained. We need to hire, as a congregation, we need to hire a personal worker. Okay? You ever thought, now churches do this, okay? What'd you say? We need to, if a church says, we need to hire some singers, then we wouldn't have to sing. They could sing. They could do them with. We could hire somebody to be a professional prayer leader. And then we could hire people to partake of the Lord's Supper. And then before long, we wouldn't even need to come because we've got all these people. The fact of the matter is, all of us need to be personal workers. Now, certainly, we could hire someone to teach us to do better and that, to maybe organize if we've got a congregation large enough that we need to work in groups, some activities that would help to lead souls to Christ, and whether it be door knocking or whatever you would choose to do in that regard. All of us need to be striving to reach souls with the message of Jesus Christ. We should not think too little of our contribution. Why do people select a church? This is another study. 3% because of the minister's personal visit. 9% because of an attractive building. That's kind of sad, but that's reality sometimes. 14% because of a previous church affiliation. 18% because of the convenience to their home. And 56% because of direct or indirect contact from one of the members. We think that we're not a five-talent personal worker, but so we don't really do much of that. The fact of the matter is, your godly living is making a profound effect upon people in your neighborhood. And we need to have the courage to speak up to them about the gospel. You think you're not polished and you're not educated in these matters? Well, look what Paul said. Jesus said to Paul, when he prayed that the thorn of the flesh should be removed, he prayed 3 times. You know, God didn't really say no. I mean, he did, but he didn't say the word no. I'm not going to remove your thorn of the flesh. No, he didn't do that. You know what he said? My grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. So then Paul says, therefore, most gladly I will rather boast in my infirmities that the power of Christ may rest upon me, for when I am weak, then I'm strong. If you're not very good at doing personal work or reaching out or talking to people about the gospel, you're the perfect person to do the job. You will depend more on God than on your talents. people will be able to see. It's not hard for people to see when you're doing something that you're not polished at. You may stumble around a little bit, or it just may not be easy for you to do, and people see that. And you know, while they're sizing you up, they're thinking, why is he doing it if it's not something that he finds enjoyable? He must be doing it because he cares about me. And he cares for lost souls. So if you're a one talent personal worker, you may be far more effective among the people that know you than if you were to bring in a five talent stranger who's got a silver tongue and knows exactly what to say in every situation. Doesn't matter. He's a stranger. They don't know him. They know you. We need to be confident that God can work through us. And we need to hone our people skills. We need to recognize that the more we work to better ourselves, and there are lots, there's a wealth of resources and things like that that will help you to be able to, and some of it may be in the sales, but you can adapt the ideas and the concepts to reaching others. You're not trying to game people or trick them or manipulate them in any way. You want to try an approach that you're the most comfortable with as possible, but at the same time, something will be effective. I've tried many of them, but if you keep doing that, you will improve your people skills. It'll get easier. In fact, you will become in time very comfortable doing it without thinking too much. James says in chapter 2, "My brethren, do not hold the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, with partiality. For if there should come into your assembly a man with gold rings and fine apparel, there should also come in a poor man in filthy clothes, and you pay attention to the one wearing the fine clothes and say to him, you sit here in a good place, and say to the poor man, you stand there or sit there at my footstool. Have you not shown partiality among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts?" But sometimes we do that with the kind of people we try to reach the gospel with. We shouldn't do that. In fact, in any group or in any situation, if you see someone who is not the life of the party, he's not the center of attraction, he's not there where he's maybe off to the side. Maybe he doesn't want any company, or maybe he does. You won't know until you go over and talk to him. But you may find someone there who will appreciate the effort that you've made. There's no reason for you to go over there. He doesn't have money, he doesn't have a lot of, it might not be good looks or good clothes or fancy clothes or anything like that. But the fact that you took the time and noticed and cared might make all the difference in the world. So we need to think about how we can better reach out to people. And the Lord's, what is taught in the Gospels, in the life of Christ, about how he reacted and how we dealt with a myriad of situations are great examples for us. So you read the Gospels over and over and over, thinking in terms of how Jesus approached people. And I know that Jesus could read hearts. We can't. That doesn't mean that we can't get better. But if we'll try to eliminate these barriers in our lives, we can lead souls to Christ. It's a great thought that I could lead a single soul to Jesus Christ. That's a humbling thought. And it should be. But the truth of the matter is we could lead many people to Christ. Jesus said, "Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Therefore, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves." God wants us to be smart. Harmless, yes. Sinless, yes. Always leading others to righteousness, not unrighteousness, not compromise. But he wants us to be smart and to think how we might better ourselves as a worker. In Matthew chapter 9, he said to his disciples, "The harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray the Lord of harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." That's what we're like. We're like laborers in the harvest. Who makes the harvest? God makes the harvest. It is not up to my clever approaches to people. It's not up to anything about me to lead souls to Christ. God's going to take care of all that. I'm just the one who goes and gathers it. And I know it's not easy sometimes. Jesus said that there's tares among the wheat. Sometimes it's hard to tell. When you're dealing with someone, you have to see them bear their fruit, whatever that is, or no fruit at all. And when you see that, you come to learn. But we need to recognize how precious souls are, so that if we're willing to eliminate as many of these barriers as we can, God will bless us. We'll plant, we'll water, and God will bless us with the increase. Let's be thinking about that this week as you go about your work in your job or even in your neighborhood, at the grocery store. Always be aware, spiritually aware, of the circumstances around you for temptation, yes, but also looking for people that might be interested in an invitation to church. I know people who carry around might be tracts or some type of a card, business card type of thing. They're ready to hand out to people at any time. So we need to be planning and thinking about that, and God will bless the efforts that we make. Let's get our song books out. Okay. If you're here tonight and you realize that you're not where you should be in the presence of God and your service to God, that's important, because you don't need to be really trying to lead souls to Christ if you're not right with God yourself. I've had a number of people who were not Christians who would come to me. I'm the preacher of the congregation, and they come and they say they have a friend and they're having this discussion about baptism. And I'm talking to them, trying to tell them how they need to be baptized to be saved. And I'm saying, well, you need to be baptized to be saved. You're not a Christian. But how powerful it is when you yourself not just have been baptized sometime in the past, but that you're living a godly life and you're striving to serve God. And that example is so powerful in the minds of the people that you're talking to. They're not sizing you up. They are thinking about all the good things that you do and how they need to be more like you. And you're a light. And what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, don't be bashful. He said, let your light shine. Don't promote yourself, no, but let your light shine. Don't be afraid of that. And others will see your good works and glorify God who is in heaven. If you're in need of God's salvation anyway, then we encourage you to come. Let's stand and sing.